This is the 10th class. You guys must be slow because last year in Indiana I finished all this stuff in 8 lectures.
Of course we skipped 4 chapters.
Hey, where did we leave off last time? Where exactly did we leave off last time? We left off with the Sahaba last time?
Oh, we had 2 reasons for leaving that person.
Classification of
Sahaba. Sahaba Ibn Mustafa al-Jarh. We finished 2 of them.
2 of them,
yeah.
Now we'll talk about majhul or unknown. Unknown narrators. I think Fakhi last time he asked, what's the definition of an unknown narrator?
He's in the third, right?
The definition of majhul or unknown narrator, according to the scholars of hadith, is anyone who, it's not all of the above, any of the above, anyone who is not known to study hadith, to have been a student of hadith, follow the hadith. Anyone whom the scholars are not aware of. I like that one. Anyone who had only one person narrate hadith from him. The third one is anyone who had only one person narrate hadith from him.
Only one person?
Yes. And the fourth one is anyone who is not known for carrying knowledge, although he may be known for other things. For example, Malik ibn Dinar was well known for Zuhd, but he was not known for passing on ilm, knowledge.
The third one,
anyone who had only one person narrate hadith from him. In other words, to remove the condition of jahada or unknowingness, of being unknown, you have to have at least 2 people narrate. Now, amongst the people who are considered unknown, remember now the condition, and the basic, and always keep these things in mind, or to accept the narrator, these are the 2 most important. These are the things that we're looking for. Always keep these in mind when we talk about the different...
What?
Adl Wadal.
He must be... He can be Adl, but this one he's not. Like, we can do this in the
park. How do you know that? Okay, we have three types of unknown narrators. One is majhul al-ayn.
Personally,
anyone? Majhul al-ayn is someone who, as I said, the scholars The scholars are not able to describe or identify exactly who this person is. Okay, in other words, his name might be found in some chain, some isnad, but the scholars do not know who he is. His name might be in the chain, but they have no idea who he is. In other words, they might just know his name and nothing else. And of course, if they don't even know his name, how are they even going to talk about it?
Okay.
How are you going to tell someone and say someone is Mashur al-Ain if you don't even know his name?
Okay,
they're
able to identify what his
personality is. Yeah, they're unable to identify who he is. Who is this person? When did he live? Who were his shaykh? Who studied with him? Okay, what about this category? You accept it or not? You accept these narratives?
I do not.
You don't? Why?
Because we didn't know his because we didn't know anything about him, so how can we say that he's not Muslim?
Okay, these are the two conditions. We have no idea if these people are out of the bubble.
Can you start to make that statement?
Okay.
Because nowadays you may not know him, but those days when they make tijri for him, they know him.
Yeah, of course, we're talking, if scholars earlier made tijri for him, that means they know him. They will not make tijri for someone they don't know. Okay? But there's a problem here. For example, Ibn Hibban was... I don't want to talk about Ibn Hibban, suppose this person from the chain or from the people who narrate hadith, it's obvious that this person is from the first three generations of Islam. And from the chain, it's obvious that he's from the first three generations of Islam. Does that make any difference? If you know for sure he is Sahabi, even if you don't know his name.
But at a point you can't know Babat.
Babat, if he's from the Sahaba,
you always assume he's Babat?
You do not necessarily always assume, but what we know from them, what we described earlier, is that they're always very careful when narrating hadith. And you would accept that person hadith, but at the same time you would compare it to other people's hadith and make sure that he didn't make a mistake.
So we accept his riwayat and compare it with us.
I'm talking about that case where you know the person is from the Sahaba. Okay. The problem with this is some of the people, especially the Hanafis, they say that if it's from the first three generations, they have a tendency to accept the narrator. Because the Prophet said the best generation is my generation and no one after me.
Do you have to marry or not?
Yeah, in general, they accept. This is most of the scholars of hadith, except for those who are Hanafis, they reject this opinion. Because it is a very weak opinion. Because we know from the Tabi'in there are some narrators who are not Adl al-Bab.
So Hanafiya accepted if there's no proof
that he's not Bab or not Adl.
Hanafiya or the Imam himself?
Imam Abu Hanifa or Madrasa. And you will still find Muhaddithin writing today who are Muta'afi. And they'll argue for this opinion and they'll write long pages. Abu Ghudda is one of them. Abu Ghudda has written articles trying to prove that this is the correct opinion. He's been refuted many times, but he continues to write. But there's also another. This is the second one. Majhul al-Haz. This is someone who we know who he is. We know exactly who this person is. But we have no idea whether he was Adl or Muslim. And we know who he is, we know when he lived, we have an idea who his students were, who were his shuyukh, but we do not have any idea whether he is Adl or Bab.
Take a little bit, please.
Pardon me? Because Adl or Bab requires some investigation. We don't just say someone's Adam just because we saw him praying in the mosque. That's sufficient.
So do you think, because information about this is Adam, not come to us or from the experience.
Or yani he's from these people, he's not really known to pass in a hadith, but he passed on some hadith.
Okay.
In other words, he's not from those people who are really muhadithin. That's why he would be in this category. Most ulama do not accept these narratives. Well, most of them don't accept both. Except for, again, if he's from the first generation, the Hanafis, the one which is most difference of opinion is the third one.
The writing is getting better.
Okay, what do we mean by this? Not the modern pronunciation. What do you mean by this?
You think generally he's okay? He's
a they don't know our inside.
They don't know inside. Yeah.
Inside.
Yeah, and he's out of the mud. Like in the bottom is nothing. In other words, yani his private life is not known in detail. We know, yani we see him, he goes to the mosque, and we see him, yani sitting in the mosque, looks really nice. But we really don't know, yani his private life.
He didn't invite some people.
He doesn't invite people to dinner, so we can see his house.
So we can see with his beard.
And in other words, for narrators to be accepted in general, we really have to know them in detail. So,
huh? I'm not known for it.
This looks like catfish.
You don't need it. What about the hadith?
Which hadith? Oh yeah, that's my question. What about that hadith? Okay, let me ask you, is there any reason to assume that someone is adil until proven guilty? Do we assume someone is adil, Zabit? Do we have hasan al-dhan? And especially in this third case, yani fi dhahir huwa adil.
If he was hadith and didn't find out that he's not, he's not to the king.
Just keep it.
Oh, in other words, yani you think it's safer.
It's safer than that.
But the question, yani, the theoretical question. Theoretical question. Should we assume that someone, if he's adil yani in bahar in public life, should we have hasan al-dhan for him and therefore assume that he's adil?
Yeah, we assume he's
private. Why not?
We assume he is happy, but we have to be careful in just in case.
Okay, yani that's a good. Yani it doesn't have to be like what they say in English, black and white. Yeah. That's why they call him Mustur al-Hal. In other words, yani we don't know about him exactly, but if his hadith are supported by other people, we may accept.
We accept it even though we don't know his doubt.
Well, we know that he's adil al-dhahir. So if his hadith are supported by other people, there's no reason to doubt. If not what? If his hadith are not supported, no, then we would not accept. The question that Muhaddithin had to answer was, does someone become an acceptable narrator due to some information that he is adil, or can he become an acceptable narrator because there's no information that he's possessed? That's what this question boils down to. And does he have to be proven to be adil, or just the fact that we have no information that he's possessed is sufficient? That's the question.
You know, we discussed this last time when the election before the one.
I did? Yeah. You hear that now? What did I say?
The first one I left, I'm sure also is that there is no explanation, you remember that one? Some of them have no explanation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think that was about whether Rawi is for sure know that he's Adi, but he didn't have to explain. That's what he was discussing.
Yeah, yeah. It's a different situation. Yeah. What's the answer to that question?
As long as he's not fit,
as long as there's no proof that he's fit, he's out. That's your. He doesn't have to be proven to be out.
Because we know that. So, next please.
And in general, Ibn Hibban's madhab has a tendency to accept these two. He accepts this group, okay? Mashhur al-Had. He accepts that group if there's no munkar hadith related from them. There's no strange hadith from them. No rejected hadith. If there's no rejected hadith known to be narrated by these people, he looks at them. And he puts these people in his book of the Qad. He has a collection of narratives that he calls his book of Taqat, and he includes these people and he calls them Taqat. In other words, he assumes if there's no proof against them that he's out.
Which group? The second or third?
I said this group if there's no Munkar reports from them.
Yeah.
This group in general. Right? So that's why in his book of Taqat there's many narrators that other scholars do not consider Taqat. Because he follows this. Most other scholars, yeah, they will not accept these people, at least will not call them taqa until they're proven to be adil. Zahar al-Bahar.
Al-Mustur
al-Had. So Ibn Hibban is a little bit, that's why I said on this point he is lax. Yeah, he is from those who are not that strict.
Was he before al-Bukhari or after?
After.
After.
In general,
they don't accept their hadith unless they
are supporting. Yeah, in general, they are from. If we remember, we had rankings of adam. We had how many categories?
Five, six.
You're close.
There are five and somebody.
That's five with someone else and four with someone else. No. So these people, Mustur al-Hal, will be down here in the jar section, but high in the jar section.
C minus.
This is now we're talking about undergraduate. B minus grade. Any questions about it? Okay, how can someone be removed from being considered majhul?
The answer to that question
is to Ibn Hibban, the answer is he's adil unless proven. Unless there's some tajreeh for him. Everyone else is that he is not considered adil until it's proven. He's proven to be adil. Okay. How does someone, removed from being considered majhul? Yeah?
There's a change in status.
Okay, if any of these guys get married. And if there are two thiqa narrators narrating from him, he is no longer considered majhul. Two thiqa narrators. He is no longer considered majhul. Okay. But this does not mean automatically that his hadith are accepted. He's just not, he's no longer considered unknown.
Yeah? Is there any condition for majhul?
Huh?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
What's the condition?
Yani if two thaqa narrators narrate from someone, he's no longer considered majhul. In other words, we don't put him in the category of unknown people. And since two thaqa narrators narrate from him, he's considered known. But that doesn't mean yani that he would consider him thaqa. We need further proof to show that he's valid. But he's no longer considered unknown. And as I pointed out to, as I pointed out earlier, or I referred, and sometimes, and you have to be careful when you call someone unknown. You should do some, and lots of research into it. Some scholars, and if they did not find that someone is unknown, and if they could not determine or do enough research, they might say that I do not know this narrator. That's different from calling him Mashhoor. Mashhoor means that research has been done and you could not find this guy. And the scholar during his time said that he is Mashhoor. In other words, he's not from those students of Hadith. He's not known for carrying Hadith. So there's a difference between someone saying, I do not know this person, and calling him Mashhoor. Okay, for example, Al-Albani now when he writes, and there's many changes in some of the lesser known books, you'll find narrators that you cannot come across in most of the books of biography. And I'm sure they're in some books of biography, but most of the popular books, you cannot find a specific narrator. So sometimes Al-Albani, he works quickly. So many times he'll say that until now I haven't found this narrator in any book. Or I'm writing in Medina and my books are in Jordan, so I haven't come across.
Then how many narrate this hadith?
He's not the one originally narrating the hadith. He's taking a hadith from a book and he's discussing the hadith. So he says, for example, about a specific narrator, I don't know him. And which is different from him saying that this narrator is my book. As I mentioned, for example, Ibn Hazm says that Tirmidhi and Ibn Majah and Badawi, all of them are mashhoor. Someone might be mashhoor to one scholar, but not mashhoor to another scholar. Obviously, if you find one scholar saying that the person is mashhoor and the other one saying that he's, let's say, fiqh, which one takes precedence?
We're looking for these two guys who has some more evidence.
Yeah.
And no,
actually, the one who knows the mashhoor.
Yeah. And he was the one who says that the tzakah, this means he has information that the other person doesn't have. Okay, so he takes precedence. So you just, if someone says he is mashhoor, and someone else says he's tzakah, you just ignore the one who says he's
But in the case of Al-Hazm with the Tirmidhi and others, can you say that he did sufficient research?
No, that's a mistake.
Yeah, because this is, as an example, what's sufficient research doesn't include to go to the place of the person.
Yeah, if Ibn Hazm has just written a letter to anyone in the problem with Ibn Hazm is he did not travel, he was from Spain. And he did not travel except through Spain and North Africa. Had he written a letter to anyone in the Middle East, they would have known it for him. He would have even been able to send them a copy of his book. But he did not do that. So he was making judgment too quickly, I guess. So any question about...
In the case that somebody described someone is his fiqh and other is mashhoor, you see that we ignore the one who said he's mashhoor. Is that depends on the person who said he's fiqh or just
Well, always when we talk in those terms, we're always talking about someone who's qualified to make these statements. Remember we gave qualifications for a critic or method. So always, when we talk about these terms, we're talking about among those people who are qualified. Always we answer. Any other questions? Say the next category are liars. Liars. Say liars and fabricators of Hadith. As I mentioned last time, if someone is an expert in memory and in recording hadith, it doesn't matter. If he's known to be a liar, all of his hadith are to be rejected. And if he's known even just to have lied once, then all of his hadith are to be rejected.
Lying just in relation to hadith or
no, lying in general. Now with respect to fabricating hadith and making hadith, fabricating hadith is a type of kufr according to Ibn Kathir in your textbook.
For those of you
who remember the textbook.
Yeah,
I'm saying, he states that. Actually, Suyuti says that the punishment for fabricating hadith is to be put to death.
Who?
Suyuti. Well, historically, there have been some people who were put to death for this crap.
But because it's kafir.
Some say this is the punishment for it. They don't discuss whether it's kafir or not, but that's the punishment.
Look at what they say.
We'll get to that next week. And if someone narrates a hadith which is obviously mistaken, and the ulama point out to him it's mistaken, there's no excuse for this type of hadith, and the person refuses to admit his mistake or to stop narrating that hadith, then he is one, he is considered one of the liars. Also, and this is a problem we find nowadays, if someone knows the hadith is fabricated and he continues to narrate that hadith as a hadith, then he is one of the liars. Nowadays sometimes you tell someone this hadith is fabricated and he doesn't care. Because you are saying the Prophet said this, when you have been told that the scholars say for sure the Prophet, when the scholars of hadith say that a hadith is fabricated, they mean for sure this hadith is a fabricated hadith, it has nothing to do with the Prophet.
But about if just someone told you that the hadith is fabricated?
And if someone you trust? If you trust him and you think he has some prophecy, then you should stop narrating the hadith until you find out more. Now suppose someone
is the hadith of Omar and the Murad.
Which hadith? Suppose someone tells a lie, okay? Not to fabricate hadith, not to narrate hadith, but he tells a lie. And later he makes tawbah. Can we now accept this hadith?
He
claims to make tawbah, he asks forgiveness, maybe if he's and he proved the lie, he gets something illegally, he returned that to the person in this country. If someone, for example, used to drink alcohol and he stopped, he made tawbah, could we accept this hadith?
Yes.
Before drinking?
Yeah.
After he made tawbah. He made tawbah.
Which hadith? Hadith that he narrated before?
Okay, in the case of alcohol, you say yes. What about the case of lying?
No. Since you make tawbah.
Yes.
No.
There's our other.
No.
Okay, in the case of lying, some scholars say and you never accept. Because lying is something different. And now we, and he says, we may accept his tawbah, but we'll consider him a weak narrator.
I go from what
this is also a difference in the fuqaha and that. He'll be considered weak. So if he's supported by it, then we may accept it. Now there used to be a group of people, I don't remember their names, but they used to consider it halal to fabricate hadith for tarjeeb and tafheem. For exhorting people to do things and intimidating them away from it. And they take the hadith, من كذب عليه He said, yani, we are not kidabah ala Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, we are yani kidabah lahu, for him. So if someone is like that, yani, he believes it's halal, and then he's shown yani it is wrong, and then he makes tawbah, then the scholar says, someone like that, you could accept this hadith afterwards. But the problem with that is that's a very dangerous position. Because you might, yani, if you say, okay, we accept this hadith, someone might hear this hadith that you used to fabricate and not be able to distinguish between the two. So you have to be careful in that situation. But there were, yani, not in the early years of Islam exactly, but like around 200 or so, there were some people who believed, yani, for tarheed and tarheed, it is permissible to fabricate. Yani, you deal with it very carefully. And you don't call him a liar anymore, but yani, you do not. Yani, you don't accept his hadith necessarily.
But how should people...
I mean, in other words, it's best to avoid his hadith.
Yeah, because you don't know that this is only bought for... They fabricate for a real, and which one is the real one?
Yes.
Yeah.
How did they believe this is okay?
Why did they believe? Because of that argument.
What?
And if they believe that yani, fabricating hadith for the deen is not the same thing as fabricating hadith against the Prophet. And in other words, you make up something, you make something halal haram or halal or haram halal, for them yani, this will not be permissible. But you take something, yani, which is known in the religion, and you just say, yani, if you do this deed, you get such and such ajr. Allah, if you do this deed, you get such and such punishment.
But most qualified is to public
faith.
Yeah, yeah.
What
do they have, yani? To public faith.
Now, obviously, I mean, these are ignorant people. They think the same thing.
Do they have a specific deed?
Yeah, there's a certain madhab, but unfortunately for some reason I think I recorded it in the chapter on fabricating hadith. I didn't record it here. I should be doing it here. It's already in there. So, any question about liars?
So, take this carefully, the riwayat?
Yeah, in my opinion, if I was mujtahid on Roman hadith, I would say yani, avoid this, even after you mixed it.
No, we're telling you what to was saying that it's okay to fabricate hadith.
Yeah, I mean, even after he changes his manhaj, it's best to avoid his hadith.
But if he didn't change?
If he didn't change...
I mean, not a whole life like...
No, if he didn't change, he's considered a fabricator of hadith.
Yeah, that's
right.
I used to
say. Oh, no, no. I said, yeah, it was made clear to him that this is wrong, and then he changed. Like those who commit tadlis, which is the fatwa's favorite topic, those storytellers and yani, worshippers who are not people of Ilm, we'll discuss them later. So, now we come to careless or mistake prone or lenient narrators. And even though someone may be adil,
how do you say in Arabic?
غافلين غافلين
تسائلين
سائلين مين
مين
the last one is the Khalid
no I mean the last one of these three images
what is the second one
mistake prone yani they make lots of mistakes careless yani not careful when they're narrating hadith. Yani many people might be adil, they might be very good Muslims, but yani when it comes to passing on information, they are not that careful. In general, but especially in hadith, this is very dangerous. As I said earlier, if someone does not mind, for example, to sleep or to clean his glasses while listening to the lecture or this kind of thing, yani. Or those yani, people who do not compare the copies with the original text and these sort of things. Yani, these are the type of narrators described here. Ibn Rajab has divided all narrators into four categories.
Ibn
Rajab.
Rajab.
The four categories that he mentioned are, and those, this is all narrators. He divided all narrators into four categories. Those that have been accused of lying, those that have not been accused of lying, but their narrations, I can't believe what I wrote. Their narrations are full of errors and mistakes.
Before I give
there were three categories or four.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, he usually did.
Yeah.
Ibn Rajab divided all narrators into four categories.
All narrators or this?
All narrators into four categories. Those that have been accused of lying.
The first group.
That's the first group. Second group, those that have not been accused of lying, but their narrations are full of mistakes. Those that are honest, but they commit mistakes, although they're mistaken, they are not mistaken most of the time. And they didn't make mistakes.
What's the second category?
And they have not been accused of lying. In other words, they are honest, but their narrations are filled with mistakes. Third, they are honest and they commit some mistakes, but not a lot of mistakes. And fourth, the people who يعني, are the experts in hadith, who rarely ever commit mistakes. Rarely ever. No one, يعني, we will not say about anyone that he never committed a mistake. That's a Zuhri. Someone stated that Zuhri is hadith. You know, he narrated thousands of hadith. I think it was Zura, I think. He said, I studied Zuhri's hadith in detail and I found only four mistakes.
So
of these four, okay, obviously the third and fourth categories, their hadith are accepted.
Three and four.
Uh-huh. Obviously the first category are rejected. The problem is with that second category.
Carefully
comparing with us.
Yeah. How to deal with that second category, which are honest people but they make a lot of mistakes. Do we reject all their hadith?
No.
What do we do?
Compare with others.
Okay. So in other words, Yanni, if they are supported by others, now you have to realize, of course, that yani who falls into that second category, it's a question of ijtihad. Because as I said, what is a lot of mistakes to one person may not be a lot of mistakes to other people. Like Ibn Ra'in and Ibn Habban, yani just a few mistakes and they will leave you. Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak, one of the scholars of hadith, yeah, Ibn Ra'in refused to narrate this hadith because he found him making a few mistakes. So it is a question of ijtihad, what is a lot of mistakes and what is a few mistakes. And that's one reason why you might find different statements from different scholars concerning the same narrator. I think that the people who make lots of mistakes, their categories are clear. As long as they're honest, and we will respect them for their honesty, and if their hadith are supported by other people, we'll accept them. So they are weak, but so, and they may be supported.
Well, whatever they profess.
Mm-hmm. The expert
certification, Rafidin standing.
Because I just said that before, people who don't care to sleep, they don't care if they sleep in class. So those, the next category are those people who make,
but the second one, you said you look for support for the hadith, you want to do this. But I mean, it's worthless, since you have conditional statement, that you first choose
check if there's somebody who has said hadith. Mm-hmm. So we will accept that. So there's no meaning to.
No, if you have two people who are of similar quality, they're both honest, but they both make mistakes. Lots of mistakes.
Oh.
And his hadith, if they both support each other, they're getting close to each other. If you find two other people who are similar to them, and all four of them narrate it in the same way, then the possibility of them having made an error in that narration has been removed. So yeah, the way you were thinking about it, yes, if you mean you take someone better than them and support them. But we're talking about people of equivalent.
You say what? Ten people are despite to see the types.
No, I just gave example. I gave some examples. I discussed them earlier, that's why I didn't mention them in detail. No. So those people who yani mixed hadith in their old age, for example. And if someone used to be taqa and then he starts losing his mental capabilities.
Yeah, last time you mentioned the sixth one.
Because I put three into one, just put them all
in. Yeah.
And I put other three into one that I said I will not discuss. Now what do we do about these people? Those people who yani has a lot started mixing hadith, saying crazy stuff.
Should just before ikhtilaf.
Okay. So, yani if you are certain that someone heard hadith from him before he started losing his mental capabilities, then his hadith are accepted. By the way, as I mentioned, I think earlier, that usually it was the family of the person, when they start seeing the person start going a little bit, and they kind of close the doors and don't allow people to come and take any more hadith. But there were some people who still continued to narrate hadith even though this happened. By the way, it's not just because of old age, but something may have happened in his life that made him lose his novelty. There's a famous narrator, I hope I can remember his name. Anyway, what's his name? You looking at my notes again?
From Egypt.
Yeah, it's about me. Abdullah is his first name. How do you pronounce that?
Lahia.
Lahia.
Abdullah ibn Mas'ud.
Ibn Lahia. That's it. What happened to him, Fethi?
His
house burned down, he lost all his books after that. And before that he was a little bit weak. Okay. But if he narrated from his books, his hadith works out. But after that he had lost all of his books and he couldn't even go and like go over his notes or anything. And his hadith after that were rejected.
So this is what considered from a kind of corrupt?
Yes.
Because he lost his book. He is actually weak, so
after the burning of his house, he was still very heady, but he could not get anything right. So it doesn't mean just yani.
And before the burning of his house, if he just relates from his mind.
Yeah, before he was weak, but not from the ikhtilaf. Ikhtilaf means there's some cause. They use it yani in the case of some cause. And like the burning down of his house and all losing all of his books may have also had some psychological effect on him.
Yeah, that's how I understand it.
Yeah. Now what about someone? But for example about Ahmed ibn... I'm sorry. Oh, was that a question? Ibn Khaldun? No, he's not sorry. He's the first sociologist. Ahmed ibn Hanbal said about the narrator by the name of Al-Mas'udi. Okay. He said Al-Mas'udi when he was living in Kufa, his hadith, this was early in his life, his hadith were acceptable. When he moved to Baghdad, he began to mix hadith. So anyone who heard this hadith in Kufa, or Basra also, and his sama'ah is acceptable. Anyone who heard his hadith in Baghdad, his sama'ah is not acceptable.
Kufa is
Who says this about me?
Ahmed ibn Hanbal. No, his name is Al-Mas'udi. Sorry. What about if we don't know? We know he was tifa, he begins to make a salat, and Naif narrates from him, but we have no idea when did Naif narrate from him, before or after his ikhtilat. What do we do in that case?
Suppose it's religious.
Yeah, okay, if it's supposed it's just him by himself.
Okay,
if there's any doubt about these things, as a wabalat, we reject.
تركي شيخ هو بالله ما في اختلاف في حالة
before
the burning بس بعد all the مثلسين نوت
that's why يعني his hadith were between Hassan and strong weak hadith but related to this topic we should realize what's the difference between three terms okay when the scholars of hadith say that someone's hadith are munkar, let me just say in three terms and you can write them in a way you want. Okay, if the hadith is munkar, his hadith are munkar, the hadith is munkar. The next one, his hadith are munkar. His hadith are munkar. No, in my book, hadith is both plural and singular.
And munkar also.
Huh?
No.
The hadith is munkar.
No, I mean munkar also use it for plural and singular.
No.
You don't say manakir, do you?
Yes, he narrates manakir, is the next one.
Maybe he is.
What do you mean?
No, previously you didn't say it. Always use it.
He relates manakir, that's the third one.
What?
Relates manakir, and rejected.
Huh? He relates or relates from
manakir? He narrates or relates manakir. Doesn't matter to me.
Yarwi manakir.
When you say the hadith is munkar.
What do you mean by that? Before you ask the question, what does that mean?
Does he narrate that it's not that known or what? Because
not the difference between he and he. Okay. That's what we're trying to get at. I said we have to distinguish between these three terms. Okay? Without yani to move on a little bit quickly, I'll just tell you what the three okay, the hadith is munkar. The hadith is munkar according to the early scholars. Hadith being munkar means يعني, it is something that's only narrated from one person. Like ghareeb almost. Even if that person is tafa, it means يعني, that he's narrating in such a way that the other people do not narrate it.
Even if it's munkar, it's
actually, you can find that term, Qudri Barawi. The later scholars use this term, yani the hadith of Munkar, to mean that it is narrated by only weak narrators and it is contradicted by stronger authorities. So we have to, in the first case, we have to distinguish between what the earlier scholars said and what the later scholars said.
Early
is Ahmed ibn Hanbal and before. And later is after the time. Okay. If they say munkar al-hadith, okay, or his hadith are munkar, if this is stated by al-Bukhari, now al-Bukhari was very kind in the words that he used. He never called anyone a liar, and he tried to be very soft. If al-Bukhari says about someone that munkar al-hadith, this means this person's hadith are to be rejected completely. Okay. In general, munkar al-hadith is a description of the narrator. Okay, it's a description of the narrator, that his hadith are to be rejected in general.
Hadith is describing the
hadith. No.
In the first term.
Now, the first one, as I said, the hadith of Munkar, if you're talking about the early generations, it doesn't necessarily mean, even it's a rejected hadith. Yes. Now, but Munkar al-Hadith is talking about the person. That yani, he is a very weak narrator, his hadith is rejected.
Which means his hadith is Munkar.
Yes, I guess you could say that. Munkar in the terminology of the later scholars.
What about the hadith of Munkar, you say?
هذا الحديث منكر. هذا الحديث منكر.
وهو
إيه؟ وهو حديث منكر. الرجل فلان منكر الحديث. منكر الحديث.
The third one is that we mentioned. He relates manakir. Okay. Now this is not a description of the narrator. يعني as such. In other words, you're not saying that the narrator is weak. If you say about someone that he relates manakir, you're not saying that this hadith is rejected. But the person may be taqa, but he has some shad or some strange reports or solitary reports that are to be rejected. See the difference?
I thought this means in Arabic that he only narrates the
only.
First of all, what it means in Arabic doesn't matter.
Okay,
what is that one? Manakir hadith. He relates manakir,
number one.
And
in his
collection,
there is some manakir
person. In the hadith that he related, there's some rejected hadith. Now, sometimes it's the case that he narrated manakir, but he himself is thiqa. But he, those manakir or those rejected hadith are not his fault. They are from the people he's narrating from. In other words, he did not distinguish himself, he did not distinguish between Munkar Hadith and Sifr Hadith. His Taqab, he's just passing on the information he got. Okay, so when they say that he relates Manakir, doesn't necessarily mean that he's to be rejected. In fact, most likely they're using it for that, for someone who is accepted. But he has...
And this is referred only to those who with weak statement? Or...
What does this mean? Is that yani he relates manakir? Is that if you come across this hadith, okay, you might find some hadith that are strange, and yani, that are known to be, for example, rejected. It means that yani, he is not the one to be blamed for that. Or it means that his solitary reports, yani the ones in which he differs with other people, are rejected, but otherwise his reports are accepted.
This is very ugly.
You mentioned that the Munkar Hadith is talking about the narrator himself. This is not the interpretation of what
I'm saying. This is not a description of the narrator as being a weak narrator. And I say that he relates manakir does not mean that he's a weak narrator.
Why? The second one means that he's a weak.
Yes. The second one means that he is yani, very weak. Like all his hadith. Yes.
See, in morning class not to be free.
What's that?
Morning class.
But as in the case of Adam, and all the narrators who have made tajreeh for them have had made tajreeh for them. And they're not all one category, but there are different categories. And again, and the scholars use specific hadith to describe them. I mean, just specific terms to describe them. The first very small print, because I wanted to put it all on one page. This is what made me a little bit late, because I asked the software to print 17 copies, and software has to download every copy it makes. It has to download all the fonts again, so it takes about 5 minutes a page. I've got many things, but I hope sufficient.
They've done one, and we have a copy machine here.
Yes, but that copy machine belongs to the madrasa. Sometimes this class is not on good terms with the number of the people. Okay, first thing, of course, make all the corrections, all the mistakes. These are the rankings according to Ibn Hajar. Notice that he has six categories again.
When did Ibn Hajar leave?
When did he leave? 5 minutes ago. he lived around between 7 to 800. Again, yeah, the earlier scholars had less. Nawawi had 5. Ibn Sabah had 4 categories. As you go down from the first category, I hope you can read out the printed notes so small that you cannot read. I can read. Fine for me. Any question about any of those terms in there?
We're still going down. And before we started with the best, we went down. So we got it almost halfway good, halfway bad. Now we're starting with that. And bottom, the last category, obviously. from the third category down. The first category here, you might sometimes accept the hadith if there's plenty of supporting evidence. The rest, no.
In the second one, use the word lahu malakiyya. Does that mean that's in the rest of the hadith?
If this is the only thing that they say about it, nothing else, lahu malakiyya, then that means that.
That's a hadith other than the
The first group, and they have lots of supporting evidence, and that removes the doubt or the possibility. The doubt that there was an error made.
Okay,
the first group are terms that are not that harsh. This is just for the same thing. Bear with me. Terms that are not that harsh, for example, there are some statements about him. He has a weakness. He has been criticized. There's some discussion about him. He's not satisfactory. He's fragile. I don't know what word I could come up with, lame.
Fragile.
He's not strong. Next category, the terms get a little bit stronger, like weak. This hadith, I rejected him. He never has rejected hadith. This hadith cannot be used as proof. Get stronger in the next category. Very weak. We'll discuss it later. That's why I didn't translate, because we'll discuss it later. Third category, again, stronger. Very weak. Do not record his hadith. In other words, do not record his hadith even for supporting evidence or anything. Cannot use his hadith. He is nothing. He is not worth anything.
That's a thing.
That was the first one that you said we shared. He's not allowed to narrate from him.
The second hadith, even his hadith, is not recorded for the supported evidence.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the third one is definitely.
Oh, definitely. Third one definitely.
The fourth one?
The
fourth one is, can he terms just short of calling the narrator a liar, like he is implemented or accused of lying? The fifth one gets stronger again, like liar, antichrist, forger. And the sixth category are those people who are an extremist when it comes to forging hadith. The greatest liar of the people is extreme in lying. So, there's one term, by the way, I think we should, because the meaning of Hajr in a book called Taqrib al-Tahdhib, he uses this term a lot.
Which term? Mahdur.
This term, Mahdur.
What's his book name? Taqrib al-Hadith.
And this, I want to discuss the books. In this particular book, you'll find this term a lot. تقريبا التهديد.
I have a question. Sure. Extensively used the whole hadith, يعني after the first class. So how does it work for us to classify this? As we reviewed all.
Yeah, because okay, that's a good question. The second through fourth category. Their hadith would be called very weak. I don't think I may have mentioned that. He would call their hadith very weak, which means we don't have proof that it's fabricated, but the preponderance of the evidence is that we're fairly certain that it is not a true hadith of the Prophet. But we cannot accuse anyone of fabricating. While the last two categories, their hadith, are considered fabricated. That's why we make this.
I was unable to read for something in the
By the way, no one's mentioned the mistakes yet.
يجوز بالمرة يجوز بالمرة. Yeah, يمكن they throw him with this. If you are sure about the filling, that's the only root. فلا ارمي حديثة دونت
What does this term mean, maqbool?
Accepted.
And he does not get the hadith through the proper means. And he like he comes and takes someone's book without his permission of certain areas. Okay.
And he can say that Allah, he can narrate Sahih hadith.
لا نطلب ضعيف
ما يجد
يعني
يجد those يعني
Yes, it's considered the type of fabricated hadith because they didn't get it properly.
No, no, he said ahadith are wa'ifa jidda. Even if he narrates sahih hadith,
hey, because we're talking about him. We're talking about him himself. His hadith are very weak because we cannot trust how he got
them. Can he have some names?
No. next time. Some other time.
Yani
we're going to go, we'll, yani we're going to make takhrij of some hadith. Okay? There'll be some names. What does this term mean, by the way? In this book, by Ibn Hajar, what does this term mean?
Huh? Yeah, because he heard you saying, he said, Abdullah said, accepted, he said, no. So I mean, that is true.
Yeah, okay, you were almost there. And he says, this is why I'm pointing out this term, because it's a little bit deceiving. What does he mean by it? Maqbool, what he means by that, there's something missing. Maqbool, yani, if he's supported by other people. That's what he means by maqbool. So you see that term, yani, it makes it seem like his hadith are accepted.
There's only عند ابن حجر.
Yeah, in the introduction to التقرير التعديل, he says, this is what I mean by this term.
أو السكيب المقدمة الشيخ العالم.
طيب different scholars also had their own terminology. As I said, البخاري was very soft in his terms. He called someone منكر منكر الحديث, which means completely rejected. If he says there's some discussion about him, this means he's very weak. Shafi told one of his students, Ibrahim, إبراهيم المزني
المزني
المزني شد الزبد زين كما سمعنا إيه
مزني شد
إيه anyway المزني and he used to Ibrahim used to use terms like he is a liar so Shafi told him Ibrahim you should soften your terms and make them better. Do not say liar, but say his hadith are nothing, or he is nothing, or he has nothing, ليس بشيء. So what this means is that if Shafi or Muzni say ليس بشيء, they mean the person is a liar. Shafi. So you have to be familiar with sometimes the terminology of the difference, sure. Like for example, speaking mother. What is that? How bad does that sound?
Are they consistent with using the
terms? Yes,
yes. Yeah. Each sheikh has his own terms that he will use and share with them.
And explain those.
Consistent in the usually explain. Except Yahya ibn Ma'in. He was consistent, but he used one term meaning two things. Laysa bi shaykh for Yahya ibn Ma'in means two things. Sometimes he used it for narrators who narrated very few hadiths. He doesn't have many hadith, he doesn't narrate many hadith. Or it means someone who is weak. Very weak. So you have to study the narrator. If he's someone who is narrates lots of hadith and Yahya says they should be shamed, it means that he's very weak. Yahya ibn Ma'in.
Yeah, but because ibn Ma'in was Shafi'i in the same category, this means that they have become
as I said, if Shafi says they should be shamed, it means he's a liar. لا. One who called, he said, Shafi is not.
Okay. Now, now we have another problem. If you take a book about narrators of hadith, you will often find contradictory statements about the same narrator. Sometimes you'll find contradictory statements about the same narrator from the same scholar. Okay. What to do with those cases?
The status might change.
Yeah. Okay, sometimes if you read these books of biography about specific narrators, sometimes you'll find contradictory statements from different scholars about that narrator. Sometimes you find contradictory statements from the same scholar about that one narrator. Okay?
In the first case,
in the second case, okay, the second case, different statements from the same scholar about one narrator. It could be due to one of four reasons, which some of them already mentioned. First of all, the sheikh, the critic, could have learned some new information about the narrator, right? So he changed his mind about the narrator. In that case, you have to study to find what was his latter opinion, and you accept or you follow his latter opinion.
Why did he took out his latter opinion?
Huh?
Pardon? Why didn't he take his latter opinion by himself?
For example, if Naya comes to me and he asks me about Fatih, okay? So I say Fatih is Daif. Naya leaves, he goes to some other city and he says, Jamal said Fatih is Daif. Okay? I study your hadith a little bit more, I find out you're Daif Jidda. So Muslim comes to me and he says, what do you think about Fatih? I say, Daif Jidda.
He thought that you are going to be...
No.
No upgrade.
So in a case like that, we have to study to see what was his latter statement. Mm-hmm. Second, as I mentioned earlier...
So you remember the last one, the last one.
It's like, Nasakh or Nasakh. The second one is that... Now we're going on to the second one. Second one is that sometimes because the way the question was asked, the answer is different. Sometimes, for example, someone would ask about, what do you think about so-and-so's nice hadith about wudu? Okay? And in that particular hadith, he's mistaken. So the guy says, or something like that, believes. So sometimes the way the question is asked leads to a different answer. So it seems like one day he might say, Naya is taqa, while when answering that question, he'll say, Naya is munk. So in a case like that, we just have to study to see how the question was asked. And in other words, those are sometimes apparently contradicting one fact they must come to. A third case is similar to that, and I mentioned it earlier, is that in one case he might be comparing the narrator to someone, and in another case he's comparing him to someone else, so therefore it's opposite. Okay. Like comparing Naif to Ilyas, I would say Naif is... What would I say to Ilyas? Comparing him to... Okay, I might say that Naif is Taqa in that case. But if you ask me to compare Naif with Musa, I might say that Naif is weak. Okay. So there are not... So they're not actually contradictory statements, although they seem like they're contradictory statements.
Fourth reason.
Actually, I put the fourth reason on the seven.
So three reasons.
Anyway.
Is there any possibility a sheikh was wrong?
Yeah, this is like if he gets new information or if he...
And he forgot. And he was mistaken once.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, this is the fourth mission.
I don't like this one.
What about the first
one? I mean, when we found some different description for the same person in different shares.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, okay. We're there now. Okay. So, this is where you have one narrator, a difference of opinion about him from different shul, okay? Different scholars. So, the opinion of the majority of the scholars, according to Al-Khatib al-Baghdadi, is that jarh takes precedence over azl in this case. Jarh takes precedence over ta'dil. Tajrih takes precedence over ta'dil.
Why?
Jarh muqaddam.
Okay, what is the reasoning behind that?
To be in the same side.
Okay, it could be to be in the same side, but there's another stronger reason. Okay. And because, for example, if you say that someone is taqa, it means according to what you've known, he is taqa. Well, if someone else says, yani, that he's a liar, this means obviously that this person has some information that you don't know. So therefore we take his information and take precedence to what you stated about the person. But this is not the case always. There's some conditions to that. And that goes back to the conditions I stated for Jahru Ta'dil. In other words, if the tajrih is due to, what was it again? Subjective reasons. In that case, the jahru does not take precedence to the ta'dil. Now there's another opinion, the second opinion, that was the first opinion, is the opinion of the majority of the scholars. The second opinion is that those scholars that say the narrator is adil, if they are more in number than those who make the tajrih, then we... Yeah, in other words, we follow the majority.
Vote.
This is the Tunisian opinion. What's wrong with that opinion? So it's not always with the majority. And it goes back to the reasoning of the first opinion. And if these people know that this person is not acceptable, and he makes lots of mistakes, even if there's just one or two scholars who see that and know that, and then if they can prove that, what we talked about before, whether the tajrih is proven or not, or explained, if they can prove that, then their statements should take precedence over the scholars who make... Yeah, I'm saying that's the problem with that thing. That the reasoning of the first opinion is strong. Another opinion, which is kind of interesting, that you go by who are the better scholars of Jahru Ta'dil. In other words, if Al-Bukhari says about someone fihi nazar, well, yes, says the taqa. Which one are we going to have? This opinion says, you, in other words, this is like you weigh the statements. In other words, you don't give the same weight from something that Al-Bukhari said as you give to someone who's not that good. So, wait, give them weight.
But Al-Bukhari, he didn't give that information about this.
Sometimes that's the case. Sometimes Al-Bukhari showed that the earlier tajrih was incorrect.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Al-Bukhari gets more information.
So he not. But usually that's the case. The better the scholar, that's what we're talking about. The better the scholar, we're talking about people who are better and have more information of judging the narrative.
What about the latest scholar that that has been?
No, I'm not sure. And the one who was alive during his time, or just after his time, who could study his hadith and meet with his students, and maybe even meet with the person, this is preferred to someone who came.
I think he is referring to just the permission he gives us in his time. I mean, like now we can, the makhsuta that was found earlier, I mean, later than, there's somebody who didn't know this information.
It may not be the case with the Jahru Ta'dil. Because to see his mistakes, the one who was alive at the time and is listening to him and meets with his students,
he's the one who is seeing his mistakes better than someone who comes later and just looks at the book.
Then in the first occasion, we have the implicit assumption that we are in the same degree. I mean, those are the
okay, yeah, if you make that assumption. Yeah, as I said, we're assuming that everyone meets the conditions for critical. By the way, most times the contradictions are not real or strong contradictions. Imam Muslim, in the introduction to his Sahih, he divided narrators into three categories. Those narrators whose reports are acceptable without any need for further support or further corroboration. And in other words, their hadith are Sahih by themselves. Second category is those narrators who may be used for supporting evidence and who may be supported by others and therefore accepted. And in other words, they are not accepted by themselves. And the third category, those narrators that are to be rejected and cannot even be used for supporting evidence. And pretty much you can divide all categories into these three, all narrators into these three categories. If you keep these three categories in mind as general categories, you'll find that there's really not that much contradiction between what the scholars are saying about specific narrators. In other words, when there's contradiction, or apparent contradiction, it's usually a matter of degree. But if you talk about these three major categories, one is not saying he's from the third category and someone else is saying he's from the first category. That's very rare. And usually within these categories, some are putting him at the top of the category, some are putting him at the bottom.
What
about Ibn Ba'ur? Yeah, he's Muftaqa. Some people said he was talking about Imam Shafi's uncle.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a kind of very strong.
Yeah, we take out those that are based on objective purpose. Our subjective view. And that was always the case.
Unless you know.
Unless you know. I do not know. I don't remember exactly what you any questions so far? Any questions about Jahra Ta'deeh? This brings us finally to the end of Jahra Ta'deeh.